Khamenei, the leader of Iran, and the rest of the Iranian leadership think that the war has not finished. They are convinced that the combination between Trump and Netanyahu is very dangerous for Iran. They were taken by surprise in the June operation, and they are convinced that somewhere, someone, a continuation of the war, the leadership of the Iranian army and the IRGC are making daily military preparations for the next round. I don't think that the main question is whether, but when.
Welcome to the Miskav Institute for National Security's Mideast Horizons, the podcast for anyone who wants to truly understand what's happening in Israel and the Middle East beyond the headlines and spin. I'm Asher Fredman, your host, executive director of the Miskav Institute, and a visiting fellow at the Heritage Foundation. My co-host, Lab Harkov, unfortunately cannot be with us this week, but she'll be back next week. Please subscribe and follow wherever you get your podcasts, and also, please share this podcast with anyone that you feel could benefit from getting a deeper understanding of the critical issues on the Middle East and Israeli national security agenda. You can reach out to us with your comments and suggestions at MideastHorizonsPodcast@gmail.com, and we read and respond to all of your comments, so please keep them coming. This week's guest is Dr. Yossi Mensharov. Dr. Mensharov is one of the leading experts on Iran and its proxies in the Middle East. Dr. Mensharov is a senior fellow at the Miskav Institute for National Security and an advisor to Israel's senior decision makers and policymakers on Iran and its proxy network. He holds a PhD from the University of Haifa, where he studied transnational Shia political movements in the Persian Gulf, and he's a frequent commentator in Israeli international media. This conversation is taking place as Israeli Prime Minister Netanyahu prepares to meet with U.S. President Trump in the United States on December 29th, and Iran is expected to be at the very top of the agenda. And as there's a growing discourse, speculation about the possibility of renewed conflict, renewed fighting between Israel and Iran, between Israel and Hezbollah in the north. And in this conversation, we really go down deep into the likelihood of renewed fighting, what could be the trigger, what should be Israel's goals if such fighting is renewed, what is actually happening in Iran, in Hezbollah, how likely is it that we may see regime change in Iran? To what degree is the Lebanese government or the Lebanese armed forces working to actually disarm Hezbollah? And what kind of support do they have for the population? And what are some tactics or strategies that they could try or that they could try with U.S. support, which have not been implemented to date? So without further ado, please stay tuned for this wide-ranging conversation with Dr. Yossi Mensharov. Dr. Yossi Mensharov, thank you so much for joining us on Miskav Mideast Horizons. And we're talking at a time when there's a discourse on what's going to happen next with Iran. Is there going to be renewed fighting? Is the Lebanese government, in fact, working to disarm Hezbollah? Is there a deadline for the demand to disarm Hezbollah? And all this comes together as Prime Minister Netanyahu prepares to travel to the United States to meet with President Trump, and the issue of Iran and Hezbollah is sure to be high on the agenda. So what I wanted to do is actually start with the end, with the question that's on everybody's mind, and then we can work our way back. But the real question I think that's on everybody's mind is there going to be, in your opinion, do you see another round of fighting, another war between Israel and Iran over the next 12 months? And if so, what's likely to trigger that?
Well, thanks for inviting me. I don't think that the main question is whether, but when. Khamenei, the leader of Iran, and the rest of the Iranian leadership think that the war has not finished. They are convinced that the combination between Trump and Netanyahu is very dangerous for Iran. They were taken by surprise in the June operation, and they are convinced that somewhere, someone, continuation of the war, the leadership of the Iranian army and the IRGC are making you know, you can say daily military preparations for the next round. And you can see by their declarations that they are doing their best so they will not be taken by surprise again. I can say even that there is some kind of trauma in Tehran, because they didn't read the map. There were so a tremendous change in the regional landscape, the downfall of the Assad regime, the assassination of Nasrallah and the leadership of Hezbollah. And even you can see the historical decision by the Board of Governors of the IAEA against Iran in June. The Iranian intelligence apparatus didn't read correctly this change. And that was one of the major obstacles for Khamenei to be prepared for this scenario of war. So now they are doing their best not to be surprised again. And they are sure that Netanyahu is going to do his best in order to convince Trump to join to another round of war.
What do you think could trigger another round of war? It would be an action taken by Iran. Could it be potentially a miscalculation on the part of Iran?
I think that Prime Minister Netanyahu and Defense Minister Katz should be very careful with their declarations, because I see in the Iranian media, they translate and publish each declarations of this two high-ranking officials, and they are sure that they can read the Israeli preparations for a possible war through this channel of public declarations. So when Netanyahu or Katz declare that Israel will not allow Iran to do anything in nuclear field or the missile field, and that's this or that action would be a red line, so they take it in a very serious manner, and that could cause a miscalculation between Tehran and Israel. Even if Netanyahu doesn't really mean to launch another military action against Iran, but he said that any specific action in the nuclear sites would be a red line for Israel, the Iranian leadership take it very seriously. So Israel should be very careful with these declarations. I don't think that Khamenei sees the current developments in the region as suitable for Iranian decision to launch a war. I think that they are waiting for Hezbollah to be well prepared. They must first rehabilitate the serious damage that has been caused to the leadership of the Hezbollah and the ranks of the field commanders. And even the public opinion inside Iran is one of the criterion that the Iranian leadership regards as crucial, according to Iranian media, to decide whether this is the right time or not to launch a war.
So then what could trigger potentially a Iran-Israel conflict? Could it be a miscalculation? Could it be Iran crossing a certain red line or redeveloping a certain capability? What do you think could be the trigger for the conflict that you've defined as not if, but when?
Mainly, I think that some declarations by Prime Minister Netanyahu and Defense Minister Katz might cause miscalculation, because they declared the red lines of Israel, and if Tehran would be convinced that Israel is going to launch a war, some elements in the security ally of Iran will try to push Khamenei to actually to be the first one who is attacking the second side, and not to be surprised this time. Iran is in kind of trauma following the June operation after not reading the regional landscape. There were so many tremendous change in the region, the dismissal of the Assad regime, the assassinations of the leadership of Hezbollah in Lebanon, the historical decision of the Board of Governors of the IAEA, and the intelligence apparatus of Tehran was very surprised by the attack. They didn't read the tremendous change in the region. So now they're doing their best not to be caught surprised again. And they're reading carefully the declarations, mainly of Netanyahu and Katz, as I see it in the Iranian media. And they are impressed that Israel is serious with its red lines.
If you were advising Prime Minister Netanyahu as he's walking into the room for his meeting with President Trump on the 29th in Florida, what would you advise him, given what you've said about how Iran is looking at the Israeli arena and looking at what Israeli decision makers are saying? What would you advise him as the most important point that he should work to get across or to President Trump? Or what's the most important issue where we need to deepen U.S.-Israel cooperation?
I see the specific powerful combination of Trump and Netanyahu as very dangerous for Iran. I think that the most correct action against Iran should be in the larger scope, not to focus on the Iranian missile program or the nuclear facilities, but the regime itself. I think that we have now a very unique opportunity of the coming 3 years that Trump would stay in office. We have elections in Israel in the coming year, but this combination of Netanyahu and Trump, if Netanyahu wins the coming elections, would be very risky and dangerous for Iran. Both Israel and the U.S. possess significant capabilities, and with the combination of assistance for the Iranian opposition, Israel and the U.S., I think, should assist.
Do you think that regime change is a feasible goal, that it's something that the U.S. and Israel can meaningfully contribute to, or is it something that's entirely up to Iran, its opposition in the country, outside the country?
I think this is the right option and the right scenario to promote. I see the Iranian society as ready for this tremendous change. There are many calls by the Iranian public for Trump to assist the Iranian opposition to dismiss the regime. The main point is that you cannot promote a regime change from outside the country. So, of course, Israel and the U.S. should do their best efforts to assist the Iranian society, which, according to many indications, about 80 to 90% of the whole society rejecting the regime. So it would be very useful not to target just the nuclear facilities or the missile program, but to look at the broader picture and take actions against the regime from inside Iran by assisting the Iranian people to achieve freedom.
What's the situation in Iran now in terms of the economy, stability, sort of social fabric? There's reports of drought, of water shortages, of rising inflation, an attempt by Iran to basically drop a bunch of zeros off the rial in order to counter that rising inflation. What's the situation now inside Iran?
There are some dramatic crises in Iran in many fields, such as water, energy, air pollution, and of course the economy. The situation is that the Iranian regime as a whole doesn't care about the Iranian people, and most of the resources of Iran allocated for the assisting the proxies.
Even now, even
despite the water shortage and the problems in the fields of the energy, you can see that Iran gave Hezbollah since January $1 billion.
Really?
To rehabilitate, according to some reports. So you can see that they still stick with the strategy of assisting the proxies, and the one who is bearing the price is the Iranian society. So there is a tremendous gap between the Iranian society and the Iranian regime. It will be very easy for Israel and the United States to find clients in the regime itself, even not only in the society, to promote a regime change in Iran, because there are so many difficulties in the daily life in Iran, even for Iranian policemen and
of course, the workers, even in the oil industry. So I see the change of Iran as the most reliable option and strategy that both Washington and Jerusalem should promote. We should remember that the Iranian people don't have anything besides going to the streets. And once a serious riot began, the regime is just closing the internet. And you can see the IRGC and the Basij shooting the protesters. So there should be a plan what to do in this scenario. There should be a coordination between Jerusalem and Washington for this scenario. And I think that the best opportunity is the coming meeting between Netanyahu and Trump.
You know, it's interesting. I heard from some members of Iranian opposition parties outside of Iran, disappointment with Israel during the 12-day war. Certainly as the war continued towards the end, there were statements by Israeli leaders, the defense minister and others that indicated that regime change was in fact the goal. There was the bombing of the entrance to the prison and other symbolic acts that made it look like the regime as itself was a target. And then the war ended. And those Iranians who did come out and speak up against the regime, a lot of them faced, certainly it was in Iran, faced retribution. And there's a disappointment that, you know, you gave us the sense that regime change is happening, and then you pulled back and left us, you know, with our necks out to deal with the consequences. First of all, should Israel have acted differently? Do you think that the war, the 12-day war, should have been a 15-day war or a 20-day war? Do you think that it was a mistake? And obviously it had to do with the pressure from President Trump. Was it a mistake to end the war when the war was ended?
I'm convinced that if we had so many other weeks, one could feel a real change in the capabilities of Khamenei in the field of launching missiles, because the Israel Defense Force were focusing on the launchers of the IRGC. So I doubt if they could keeping with the launching missiles. And Jerusalem planned to keep focusing on targets of the regime itself. And there is a good chance that the people of Iran could feel that there is a real change and real opportunity happening here because of the war. Trump decided to stop the war. He was not part of the, I would say, radical wing in the American administration that thinks that a regime change should be the solution. Israel and Washington together should promote a coordinated strategy. They should decide whether to assist the Pahlavi opposition or to make a deep surveys of the trends within inside Iran to decide which one is the most advanced group, which has the maximal support from the society, and to assist them.
Do you think the regime change will come from the people in Tehran who oppose the regime, or will it come from other ethnic minorities in Iran, Baluchis, Azeris, the Arabs in the south, who have traditionally been opposed or not been aligned with the Ayatollah regime in Tehran?
The minorities are not the right players in this scenario. The focus should be in Tehran. The focus should be in the Persian society, which is the hardcore of the Iranian public. The Persians are some of 50% of the whole society of Iran, and the minorities are only 24 Azeris, 24% Azeris, and only some 10% Kurds, like this. The main goal should be changing the whole map of Iran, not to take this part or that part, such as Balochistan or the Azeri part. No, Israel should assist the Iranian nation to get freedom. This is the historical demand of the Iranian society. It would be a strategic, I would say, mistake, a grave mistake, to assist the minorities, because that would push the Iranian society to the regime. They are very national in Iran, and we should not do this mistake. Khamenei is now playing on this tone of the national hero who is defending the Iranian country, not only the Iranian regime, and the economic difficulties of the Iranian public is widening the gap between the Iranian public and Khamenei's psychological efforts.
There's various reports, and obviously if something is based on sensitive information, we can't share it here, but about Khamenei's health. I mean, he's not a young. What happens when Khamenei steps off the stage, is no longer the supreme leader? Does the Ayatollah regime continue sort of, you know, business as usual with the successor? Is there, you know, is there infighting? Does the regime, is that an opportunity potentially to uproot or to destabilize the regime?
I'm sure that most of the chance that Raisi was the favorite candidate for the heritage of for taking the place of Khamenei, and now no one is seen as the right person. So there is a gap, and it will be a very good opportunity as soon as Khamenei dies for the Iranian public to go to the streets. The main question is what Trump specifically would do in this case. There is no personality among the Iranian Ayatollahs who can take the place of Khamenei. It's going to be a different landscape in the Iranian leadership. No one can take the place of Khamenei.
Because there's nobody who has the religious credentials or who was there at the beginning of the revolution. What are other figures missing?
He should be charismatic and gain the acceptance and to be accepted by so many players in the Iranian political arena. So I don't think that there is one personal Ayatollah that can take the place of Khamenei. I'm sure that the Iranian people are going to use this opportunity to destabilize the order in the streets. The question is what they can do when the IRGC are closing the internet and starting shooting the people. That would be a test for Washington and Jerusalem. This is the historical moment.
Are there potentially technological solutions to overcome that, Starlink or others, to enable the Iranian people to access the internet?
The Starlink is a good option, but the regime forbids using Starlink, so that should be a strategic plan what to do in this scenario. Washington and Jerusalem should not wait to the death of Khamenei to launch a plan, but they should do it now.
So moving to an arena that's closer on Israel's border, we were both at the Miskav Institute's All Fellows meeting this week, and without going into too much detail, we heard a briefing from a senior military officer talking about the Lebanese arena and the threat from Hezbollah. We're more than a year from the ceasefire, which was established in November 2024. What do you see, in terms of the Lebanese government's ability and desire to disarm Hezbollah? And I guess you could divide it into two. You have the Lebanese government and you have the Lebanese armed forces. Is there a desire to disarm Hezbollah, and is there a capability to disarm Hezbollah?
I believe that the Lebanese state, and specifically the prime minister and president, want to use the change in Lebanon after the war to disarm Hezbollah. But it seems that they cannot promote this change because the Lebanese army is still very affected by Hezbollah. There are officers within the army who are actually operatives of Hezbollah. And when the president of Lebanon declared that the army would not use force in order to disarm Hezbollah, so you can understand that actually the Lebanese state is not strong enough to push Hezbollah to be disarmed. I think that Washington should target the Dawa apparatus of Hezbollah to disconnect the Shiites in Lebanon from Hezbollah.
Explain to some of our listeners who may not be familiar with the Dawa system. Can you explain to what that is?
The Dawa apparatus is the whole system of education, media, religious services, and so on that Hezbollah gives its basis, the Shiites, the social base, to keep them supporting Hezbollah despite the heavy price that they paid in the war. Just imagine what can happen if Trump would give billions of dollars to the Lebanese state, not to the Lebanese army, to use this money to disconnect the Shiites from Hezbollah and to disrupt the affiliation of the Shiites in Lebanon from Hezbollah and Iran.
Wouldn't there be a danger that those billions of dollars could end up in Hezbollah's coffers, or do you think that not? I think if it was given to the Lebanese government, it could
be used. The Lebanese government, right. Uh-huh. The Lebanese army should open such facilities for the Shiites so they will not go to the educational system of Hezbollah, but to the schools of the Lebanese state. Then they will learn how to be Lebanese civilians and not loyal to Khamenei. That would be the difference between the current a trend of the Shiite society in Lebanon and the possible other Shiites in Lebanon in the future. Now you can see that the United States is giving money to the Lebanese army in order to upgrade its capabilities. But you can see that many of the intelligence that Israel gives the Lebanese army to disarm Hezbollah is not taken seriously because Hezbollah still has affection on the Lebanese army.
So you said that Iran has provided Hezbollah with $1 billion since January. What is Hezbollah doing with all those funds? What are their, and we also hear that every other day, every few days, Israel is striking either Hezbollah terrorists or Hezbollah workshops or storage sites. What has Hezbollah been doing since that ceasefire more than a year ago?
First, Hezbollah is doing homework. What was wrong in the war? There are some lessons that Naim Qassem, Secretary General of Hezbollah, is trying to promote. What are the sources of the intelligence infiltration of Israel into Hezbollah? And they're trying to appease their social base, the Shiites of Lebanon, because the Shiites suffered a lot. You can see many villages in the south of the country, and even in Beirut itself, that were demolished because of the war. They have to pay money for these people who are now renting another locations instead of their homes who were bombed by Israel because they were a shelter for the bombs of Hezbollah, the weapons of Hezbollah. So appeasement is one field, and the second field is recruiting another operatives instead of those operatives who were killed in the war. There are estimations of some thousands of Hezbollah operatives who were assassinated during the war or were injured. So now Hezbollah must rehabilitate its capabilities, and you can see that also there are some declarations of Hezbollah commanders about the next round of a battle between Israel and Hezbollah. So regarding this possibility, Hezbollah is allocating much effort to build by itself missiles and also smuggle missiles from Syria and from Iran.
We've been talking a lot about the sort of the past war and what's happened since then. At the same time, we see Iran seems to be investing very heavily in trying to recruit Israelis, right? Every week, every few weeks, there's another story about another Israeli who had been accepting money from Iran to take pictures or to cause vandalism. Iran's working hard to recruit. We had the story just last week of apparently Iranian hackers who broke into former Prime Minister Naftali Bennett's phone and released all the phone numbers, including of various world leaders and his pictures. By the way, I remember you also showed us a whole long article in the main magazine of the IRGC about the Miskav Institute. Talking about how the Miskav Institute is a key player in shaping the Zionist policy of the Zionist regime, which on the one hand, I guess, is a compliment. On the other hand, certainly has led us to take various cautionary measures as well, given that the IRGC seems to have a very high opinion of the Institute. What kind of surprise or unexpected scenario might we see from the IRGC, from Iran, whether in Israel or against Israeli or Jewish targets abroad. There was some discussion about, there's some thought that Iran might, God forbid, but increase its attempts to attack Jewish targets abroad because that's an easier or a softer target than targeting Israel inside. Is there a scenario that you think that Israel or American decision makers need to be looking at more carefully so that we're not surprised like we were on October 7th?
I think that the main point is that the Iranians are doing their best to recruit any Israeli citizens that has accessibility for an Israeli senior personality. They want to assassinate Israeli personality from the security arena or the political arena. That would be a retaliation for the some dozens of major commanders in Tehran that were killed by Israel during the war. And another field is the cyber arena. They are doing their best to enlarge the scope of the threats. They cannot target Israel just by missiles. They know that the United States and Israel would try to intercept as much as possible of a missile that would be launched against Israel. So they must have another tools. And the cyber arena is seen as a suitable arena for attacking useful facilities in Israel. You can see it in the recent years. It's not just cell phones. It's also electricity and oil facilities. That could be very risky for Israel.
Thank you, Simon Sharaf. Thank you so much for joining us. And you know, you're always one of the most insightful commentators and experts on Iran. If people want to follow you, where's the good place for them to follow you to get your insights on what's happening?
I publish my publications on Twitter. You can find me there.
What's your Twitter handle?
Yossi Mansharaf.
Yossi Mansharaf. Okay, fantastic. So I'm sure people want to follow you. Thank you so much for joining us. And we look forward to having you again soon.
Thank you very much for having me.
Thank you for listening. Please be sure to like, subscribe, and rate the Mideast Horizons podcast wherever you get your podcasts. You can follow the Miskav Institute at www.miskavins.org. And feel free to send your comments, suggestions, ideas for future podcast guests at Mideast Horizons Podcast at gmail.com. And I'll see you next time.